Thank you, Cheryl. This is the meeting of the Santa Cruz Valley Water Agency Water Resources and Watershed Committee for June 8th, 2002. We have three committee members present. We're going to wait a minute to see if a fourth committee member arrives within the next hour. So please be patient with us.
Heard you guys talking about water levels. Not quite sure, obviously, about Arvitas and Bigger. They said they are down to one well out of two. I can't believe they only have two wells for the whole town. But wow. Sounds dire. It would be bad if they only have two wells for the whole town.
Very low. Arrowhead is really low.
Yeah. Is it DWP up there?
No, it's... I think Big Bear has its own municipal.
Yeah. Were you talking about Arrowhead?
Yeah, Arrowhead and Big Bear.
Oh, well, Arrowhead's Crestline Lake Arrowhead Water Agency. And I'm not sure. I don't know if Big Bear is a community service district or something like that.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to go ahead and start the meeting of the Water Resources and Watershed Committee. A few announcements before we begin. This meeting is being conducted in person at the Engineering Services Section Boardroom. As a convenience to the public, members of the public may also participate virtually by logging into the agency's Zoom meeting. Any member of the public may listen to the meeting or make comments to the committee using the call-in number or Zoom webinar link. In the event there is a disruption of service which prevents the agency from broadcasting the meeting to members of the public using either the call-in option or internet-based service, this meeting will not be postponed or rescheduled, but will continue without the remote participation. Remote participation option is being provided as a convenience to the public and is not required. Members of the public are welcome to attend the meeting in person. A reminder to staff who are presenting online, please mute all your devices until you're ready to speak. Make sure your cameras are on and you're unmuted. When you are done with your item, please remute and turn off the camera. Members of the public may comment as to items within the subject matter jurisdiction of the agency that are not on the agenda during item number two. Members of the public wishing to comment on items covered in this agenda may do so at the time each item is considered. To participate in public comment from your computer, tablet, or smartphone, when I announce the agenda item you wish to speak on, click the raise hand feature in Zoom. You'll be notified when it's your turn to speak. Please unmute when requested. To participate in public comment via phone, when I announce the agenda item you wish to speak on, dial *9 to raise your hand. Phone participants will be called on by the last two digits of their phone number or by name. When it is your turn to speak, dial *6 to unmute. People, members of the public attending in person, there are public comment cards on the inside door. Assuming it's a table outside of the table. Please complete and return to the administrative help to expedite comments. And by the way, public, please don't chat during the meeting amongst yourselves. The procedures for tonight's meetings are as follows. I will introduce each agenda item. Staff will present. I will ask for public comments. I will then ask for discussion and questions from committee members. Please raise your hand. The committee then comes to consensus to move this item to the board for consideration. Any PowerPoint shown on tonight's meeting will be posted to the SCB Water website. Of the committee members present, we have myself, Jeff Ward, coming back, Maria Gutzeit, and Bill Cooper. So absent tonight, we are missing Directors Colley and Atkins. So with that, we're going to start the meeting, and we'll start with a Pledge of Allegiance. Dr. Cooper, if you would please.
Later. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
With that, we'll move on to item number two, which is public comments. We have a comment card from Ms. Cam Miltzmeyer. Ms. Miltzmeyer, when you are ready, just stand and
yes,
make your comment, please.
Under public comment, what the item that is being considered, a major one, I really think should be before the entire board with full disclosure, and I hope that will be the case. That is my question under public comment.
Are you referring to item number 3? It's the water supply assessment.
3. I'm referring to item 3.
Okay. We will make a decision tonight whether or not to refer this on to the board.
All right. I also put in to speak on 3.
Okay.
Thank you.
So with that, are there any other public comments on item number 2, Cheryl?
May not appear to be.
Thank you. So with that, then, we can move on to item number 3. I'd like to ask the committee members here tonight, if it was all right, if we asked Rick, since we had a water supply assessment last night, if it would be okay if he just gave a thumbnail in what the differences are in this project relative to what was current, any changes that might have occurred. So with that, Rick, you can go ahead and start. And I think you can use your presentation if you need to, but we're more interested in the differences in this project than what in that last water supply assessment we saw.
Sure. Thanks, Chair Ford, and good evening, committee members. Yeah, there's only a few slides that differ. Last night, Joe Byrne had given a rather lengthy description of the water supply assessment, as well as water supply verifications and the other things that go along with that. So I did condense what he had said to only describe the water supply assessment to make it a little bit shorter and still give some of the information that that would go along with the water supply assessment. So basically, the water supply assessment statute is intended to be a better link land use decision making and water supply availability. Unlike urban water management plans, water supply assessments are project-specific analysis that are required when a city or county lead agency determines that a project is subject to CEQA. Water supply assessments must determine whether projected supplies will be available during normal, single dry, and multiple dry years and meet the demands of the project, as well as existing and planned future uses over a 20-year horizon. Projected supplies can be used in the future planned supplies, and water supplier's board of directors are required to adopt a water supply assessment in one way or one fashion or another. If the water supplier concludes that the water supplies are or will be insufficient, the water supplier shall provide the city or county its plans for acquiring additional water supplies. And then finally, an adopted WASA is not subject to direct legal challenge and can only be challenged as part of CEQA. This kind of just goes through the process.
Hey, Rick, your presentation is not showing. So maybe.
Oh, sorry. Hold on.
That's all right. Give it another.
There we go. Hold on. How's it now?
Yep. We're good.
Okay. Sorry about that. So that's what I just went over, but at least you'd have to sit there and read it as I was going through it. So this is just a slide showing the process. We can kind of skip that. We get into the actual project, which is the Wiley Canyon project. It is going to be developed or will hopefully be developed on approximately 32 acres of SCV water service area. It consists of 379 apartment units within 13 buildings. There's 32 studio apartments, 149 one-bedroom units, 174 two-bedroom units, and 24 three-bedroom units, as well as 217 unit senior living facility and around 12,000 square feet of commercial and recreational facilities. So the project is located along the five on the east side between Harkbrinn Avenue and Calgrove Boulevard. So basically just before you get to the 14, like I said, on the east side of the five.
The old Smizer's.
Yeah, and it's the road that goes through here where it says project site. I don't believe that goes through now, but I believe that's part of the project is to extend that road.
Yeah, actually it does, right? So, sorry to interrupt you, but if you go back to that screen just for a minute. So
sure.
The project includes a parcel that's on the east of Wiley Canyon Road, but it's a hillside and I don't think the developer is proposing building over there. The development would be over on the west side of Wiley Canyon.
Correct. Yeah, it's kind of where you see the buildings that are up, the little white buildings that are up on top. I think it's that side of that kind of curved road,
right?
Is what we're also. I believe that that little half circle or so, or quarter circle is open. Is going to be open space.
Right.
So, Rick.
Yes.
Just by way of history, you should know that this used to be an old mule ranch called Smizer, and then it was subject to a couple of different redevelopment plans that didn't happen, and here we are.
Okay. Sounds good.
It belongs to Joyce Rogers. Yeah, it does belong to Joyce. She's a sweet lady. Yeah.
Okay, so so the actual water demand for the project was calculated using the same method that we used for all future demand in the 2020 Urban Water Management Plan. So in an average year, the bands are projected to be about 117 acre-feet per year with demands of about 124 acre-feet per year in a single dry year and 119 acre-feet per year in multiple dry years. This project was in one way included in the 2020 Urban Water Management Plan. And it does reflect, these numbers do reflect additional watering factors that were added for the uses as well as a climate change factor. And the approach is basically the same. All of these did not change. Nothing changed there. Climate change, conservation. Still, so again, with these demands, the project is included in these demands or was included in these demands similar to the other projects. So in conclusion, staff has evaluated the long-term water demands and has compared these needs against existing and planned water supplies. Demand projections were based on population projections, county and city land use plans, both active and passive conservation, and climate change impacts. The water supply assessment concluded that the total project water supplies over a 30-year projection period will be sufficient to meet the projected demands associated with the proposed Wiley Canyon mixed-use development, as well as existing and future uses. That being said, staff recommends that the Water Resources and Watershed Committee recommend that the Board of Directors of the Santa Clarita Valley Water Agency adopt a resolution approving the SB 610 water supply assessment for the Wiley Canyon mixed-use development and direct staff to submit the water supply assessment to the city of Santa Clarita. And that is it.
Okay. Thank you, Rick. We do have a comment card. Ms. Noltzmeyer, would you like to go ahead and make your...
Yes.
Hold on just a moment until we get the timer going.
Where do you want me to...
Rick, can you stop sharing your screen, please?
Sure.
Is that the only presentation you're going to give on this? It seems to me that this is a property...
Your time, just a moment.
Oh, okay.
Thank you, Ms. Snellmeyer. Go ahead.
All right.
Are we talking about 3.1 imported water supplies? Is that what we're talking about?
No, we're talking about
item 3.
Item number three, it's a water supply assessment for the development that Mr. Vassilopoulos just described.
You've already jumped down to 3.2.2.
There is no agenda item three.
I'm sorry. But what I'm looking at.
It's the first page after the cover.
3.1, yes.
No, it's
urban water management plan.
No.
3.1, are you on 3.1? What are you on?
3.0, 3, just 3.
No,
can I
see the first
instructions? Yeah, it is 3.1 online. Oh, in here. Yeah. 3.1. Yeah, you're right.
I'm wanting to talk on
3.1. Right. This is 3.1. Mixed use development. And that is owned
by New Holland and Farming.
No, this one's not. This project is not. Point isn't?
No.
It says it in here that it is now referred as point imported water supply.
No, yeah.
New Holland and Farming Company. Now it's referred to as by point as the water transfer supply from its source.
I'm sorry. Can I see the first page of your
reading from?
I think you have this. This is the current. This is the agenda.
So this is what I received as mail about.
So let me see. I'm sorry.
It's beginning at 5:30. Water supply accessory, Wiley Canyon.
Correct.
Right.
So page number.
That's what's drawn.
Thank you.
All right, we got it straight.
I like that color shirt.
Yeah. All right. Okay,
go ahead, Ms. Saltmeyer.
Go ahead.
Yes, I'm referring to this particular development, which is by New Holland and Farming. Well, that's what they call it, but the owner is New Holland Land and Farming Company, as referred to as 5 points, if that's what you're referring it to. But that is what is going on with this. And it's a state water project supplies. And all of this is just the only water available from them is it and this anticipated to be available beginning in 2035. That is the only water that they say they can bring into this project. I've read through all of this today at length. And basically, I don't understand why you would be getting into this. You are doing this with a lot of water supply now and bringing them in. And I have a feeling that in the end, whoever will buy on there is going to pay for this, naturally. But I think that now refers to as 5 Point has a water transfer supply from a source in Kern County referred to as Nickel Water, that is plan purpose is anticipated to be available beginning in 2035. Now, that's a little far out. Who's putting it up right now? If that's what your plan is. This is a well-known developer, New Holland and Farming. Already referred to as 5 Point. If you want to refer to as 5 Point, that's the same as New Holland and Farming. And the point is, who is going to be providing the water to this project when the only thing they really have is something that can't come on board until 2035? Now, I did a lot of time reading this. I hope you know what I'm talking about. But just to go ahead and say this water is available is really going to be a problem.
Thank you for your comment.
Rick, would you like to address, are there any other public comments? Sure.
I can. I'm not 100% sure that Ms. Neltemeyer was speaking of the same project that I was describing. This is for a Wiley Canyon project that is not associated with Five Point. So I'm not exactly sure how to respond to the question.
Okay.
If I can, Chair Ford.
Thank you.
So the water supply assessment, I think the confusion that you're seeing is the water supply assessment has to take into account all supplies and demands in the entire service area. So regardless of which project is being looked at, we have to take into account all projects, also all demands, both existing and future, as well as supplies that are existing and the ones that are planned for the future. So the part that you're referencing in the document is a supply that is associated with the Newhall Ranch specific plan. And that supply is dedicated to that area. This project is not within that planning area. So it is a project outside of that, but we need to account for it holistically so that we make sure we're looking at both the supplies and the demands that are in the entire service area.
What is the name of your project?
As it's stated on the agenda item tonight, this is the Wiley Canyon Mixed Use Development Master Case 20-238.
That's what I'm referring to.
Thank you, Mr. Cole. And with that, then let's go to questions from members of the committee on this item. Anyone?
I have a quick one.
Director Goodson.
I couldn't pick up in here what the build date, do they have a projected build date for this or no?
They do not.
Okay. But I will also add that it's nice to see the senior housing because I know they were talking about that and actually across the freeway, probably when it came to Newhall. And love that they get lost. So we need senior housing too.
And just a little bit more detail, like on process wise about build dates and things. So this is this water supply assessment is part of a CEQA planning process, right? So we are requested to provide this document as part of that planning process.
Yeah.
So we submit that, and then it goes through kind of the full land use planning process.
So take a long time.
Yeah, I guess the point I'm getting at, typically these are several years away from breaking ground.
Yeah, understood.
I've heard a preliminary estimate, and I don't know how valid it is, that they're shooting to get the draft EIR out for review at the end of this year. Other questions from members of the committee?
Interesting, just in general question. I was looking at the drawing at the very back, Rick. The drawing at the very back, the three different traffic circles and a drainage basin. That's all part of this project, right?
Yes. Are you referring to the actual water supply assessment?
Yes, at the very end of it, it's the preliminary grading and drainage plan.
Yeah.
Okay.
Everything in that within that that larger triangular box is part of the project. There will be some open space, as well as there's quite a few road going through there, and they'll ideally be. It looks like from the drawings that I can tell, it looks like there may be a medium involved. So they may be redoing that road. So there will be some additional landscape, but not. And we do have some figured in, but not it's not like a blanket of landscape. It's mostly buildings and roadways.
And any low impact development features? I mean, any swales or anything like that? Yeah.
There's a few, yeah, you can kind of see on the, I don't have the drawing in front of me, but you can kind of, if I remember rightly, there's a few drainage basins, I think on both the north and south sides. And then there is a small park, I think it's like an acre and a half or 2 acre park that's on the south side of the project.
Yeah.
That'll be the only area that will be landscaped with turf. The rest of it will all be plantings according to the builder.
Thank you.
Other questions, members of the committee? Rick, I have one question. What was the anticipated demand in the urban water management plan for this project site? Do you happen to recall?
So this project was part of what we considered the balance of our project. So we had 7 or 8 projects that we knew of when preparing the urban water management plan. Those projects were specifically put in. Then we had a balance between what was left over or what was left over between those sites and the land uses that were still going to be available or still available in the city. So we basically straight lined all of that to build out. So there's not like a set specific amount that was predicted for this project, but we did use the same when calculating it. We did use the same calculation methods that we used for creating those balance of pieces that were left over. If that makes sense.
The 8 or so parcels that you were thinking of, are they all the ones on this site, or were they all around the city?
Oh, no, they're all around the city. So there's some of the large, they're basically the pieces that were in there were things like Tesoro Del Val and Tapia project. And there's a 3 or 4 more. And then as well as all of the Newhall projects. And then whatever was left over because we kind of know what build out will look like. We took the land use areas that were left over and figured it had a demand factor for those different project areas or future project areas that Bedaus figured how much what the demands would be for those areas, basically on a square footage basis or acreage basis. And that's how this was developed or how the demand was calculated for this project.
Let me. I'll just add a little bit to what Rick was saying there. So there's, you know, there's our service area, right? So you have a box. Within that box, you have existing uses, right? Existing users, which is fairly straightforward because we know what they use, and so that's a demand that gets calculated and rolled up, right? Then you have things that are specifically planned for within that box. So they're track maps or they're specific plan areas, right? And so those have pretty specific profiles to them, right? You know, the unit count, for instance, like a Spring Canyon has 498 units. And so for that, when you have that specific information, you use that in the urban plan as you roll up that demand for calculating. And then there's areas that you don't know, right? There's raw land that have land use
designations
overlaid on it. So the process that Rick described was for those areas, they take the land use and try to roll up the calculation of what that demand could be for those remaining, you know, unknown parcels within the box.
Okay. But we didn't do it a parcel by parcel or project site, you know, that the land uses proposed on this site are, you know, mixed use residential and commercial. So we estimated it's going to be so many acre feet for this project site. We didn't do that.
Not on this parcel. We took holistically how many mixed use, you know, land use criteria are in the valley and then assigned a demand factor to that.
Okay.
Per acre, right?
Yeah, per acreage. Yeah.
Based on the zoning.
Okay.
Correct.
So, and then as Director Atkins said, you know, this project, this area has had several different variations of different projects. I mean, I think they've ranged from a 13-story hotel complex to what is now the project as they're proposing. And so those other ones never really got to the stage, you know, that the land use hadn't changed for the area, and they hadn't proposed what that water use factor would be, and so it never reached the stage of including that as a specific project. So we went back to the land use kind of methodology for the properties.
And how would you, is there some scenario you would see by virtue of proposed projects on these parcels that we might exceed the demand we anticipated near water management plan? Is there some kind of warning that would be tripped that, you know, somebody comes back and says, I need a general plan amendment, and we're going to put a 13-story hotel on this site? I mean, is that, we're aware of that, and we're kind of watching it? And
well, yeah, I think that's, you know, since we've just finished the urban water management plan, we're not in that situation yet, because we did kind of take all of the demand that we perceived was left over, basically, and have a little bit every year until build out. So when we get a little bit closer to build out, it is possible that, you know, we may need to look at it a little closer, but being it so far away from build out, and one, this being a pretty small project, I don't, you know, this one's definitely not going to cause any problems, but a project like this 20 years from now, 25 years from now might. It's going to depend, you know, when we do the next urban water management plan in 5 years, hopefully we'll dial it in a little more. And then 5 years after that, we dial it in even more. But we're not going to be going over in that next, in this next 5 years for sure.
I think the point of, you know, the cycle, the planning cycles is really important there, right? Because the planning cycles will catch these and improve it as it goes, right?
So by planning cycle, you mean urban water management planning cycle.
Yeah. And so every 5 years, right, we're redoing the plan. When we do redo the urban plan, most likely this project will be either in construction, one, or it will be have a track map associated with it that has a very specific outlay for that. And so then at that point in time in the urban plan, we would move that from kind of that third category into the second category, which was a track map that has a defined area planning for it. Or it could very well be an existing user at that point, which will have the exact demand. Then the urban plan will kind of run through that exercise again, you know, for the whole area and update, right? And so that's why it's a critical component that every 5 years that plan's updated to account for kind of this unknown, you know, land use areas, right? What are they actually going to become when they get developed? It's typically been the observation that in most of these situations, historically, and there may be a changing in the way development is looking, and that's why I want to clarify that, but historically, the land use acreage and the development, you know, factor that goes on there has generally overestimated. Meaning you have, you know, 500 acres, but you're only going to develop on 100 of it. Yet that land use factor is done by acreage for the 500.
Right.
And so there's a few different.
And the assumption is that the project would use like the maximum amount of density that's allowed under the zoning and the land use.
Yeah. And what clearly happens as these projects start to move through the development process is they generally get smaller. A lot of it comes due to traffic modeling and constraints, right? You can only fit so much on the park. So as it advances through the planning process, they get refined, and generally they end up smaller. But my point is, development may look very different in the next decade, you know, two decades, and we're going to have to keep an eye on that, to your point. And this is a fast-tracking property. Mm-hmm.
Steve, when they prepared the urban water management plan, and you had these areas, Hendrick, and you had these areas of mixed use development,
you've put a factor to that and said, here's our best estimate of what mixed use development water use would be. I would just suggest that we have that number available for the board meeting, is that we could say that this amount of area was estimated based on the calculation we had for mixed use area. And it may be less now.
Okay, yeah, we'll definitely try to get some more specifics on
that. Yeah, because I'm sure you're going to get questions on that.
Yeah. You could show that we planned 7 and we're actually going to be 3, something like that, you know.
At this stage, it's 3.
We'll definitely take a look at it. It's tough to parse it out that way because of the methodology that was used, but I understand the question. We'll try and present it in a way that makes sense.
Yeah.
Plus, I mean, I would assume we had this discussion many times. When we're thinking about these things, we think about them as they come to us. So it's not like, well, what if, and forgive me if I'm missing the order, but like, what if Tapia comes next and, you know, this one uses more than we thought and Tapia asked for what we originally asked. It's like first come, first serve, right?
I think so, yeah. We're looking, especially for the ones that have water supply assessments, it's a point in time.
Right. If they haven't come to us yet, we don't go back and figure out into minute detail what we thought Tapia might have been, what this might have been, it's like the actual that comes before us and the order that they come before us is how I remember it.
And the next urban water management plan should start to catch some of that,
right?
Which may mean either you've got plenty of water or you need to start looking at another source down in the future.
Right.
Hey, other questions from members of the committee?
Just a couple items since we're fresh off of last night that I wanted to make sure we're all on the same page as far as what we want to bring to the board. We heard the letter, so we will include that in the package, so the cover letter. Currently, that cover letter from the previous direction that we got on the last WSA includes a description of Miwello and a clarification for the planning department about how that's performing and a request that we would like to start to talk about that with them. So that's what's in there now. There was some discussion last night about, you know, additional, you know, items that could be included on that. Those aren't included currently. So it's just dealing with Miwello. So I didn't know how the committee felt about that, but we're good with that, and we'll include the letter for sure in the package so everybody can see it.
Okay. That'd be good. I think, too, last night we got some pushback from some of the members of the board about impermeable surfaces, and the county has a green building ordinance. I may be dating myself here. Maybe they have something better than that. Hopefully the city has some kind of equivalent to that, and those ordinances had the goal of attempting to minimize impermeable surfaces to the extent feasible, something to that language.
Yeah.
Along with the model ordinance, maybe we're going to refer to that and say, you know,
okay.
All those things will be beneficial.
We can definitely take a stab at some of that language, the low impact development criteria, but both the city and the county are, you know, statutorily required to have now. Is something we can explain, and in there is a lot of those type of things that developments have to have now. They have to capture the first, you know, X inches of storm flow. That's a requirement now, and so we can talk through that a little bit and get some ideas about how to communicate that.
That'd be good. And you going full planner, you may want to include a concluding statement saying that all this should be reflected in the project's conditions of approval. Because what that does is it gives the whole world means of enforcing these things as well to everybody from, you know, those who enforce CEQA, which is the state attorney general, and those who with members of the public and, of course, the zoning compliance for the city and county as well, too, in perpetuity.
So that gets the other comment about whether these ordinances were enforced or not. That would be a catch-all phrase that would accomplish.
Developers, you know, they walk out of the building with a big smile and approval, and then they have a list of conditions. Here's your bill. So.
Okay, that's good. I think that's a good point. We'll take a run at phrasing it that way.
And you should have all been sent, April should have sent all of you a copy of the letter that goes out with the notification letter goes out with the water supply assessment, just from the last one that was sent out already. So if you have any comments on that, feel free to just shoot them over to Steve or I, and we can, you know, we can add things to this, obviously, if we, if you guys deem necessary.
Okay.
And I mean, I think in the past too, I mean, at least way back, you know, again, in Newhall days, sometimes when these projects came out, we would comment on the EIR if we felt there were things missing too. Mm-hmm. So as an agency, we also can comment at that point.
Correct.
Yeah.
And we do that also. We still do that here. When we get the notification that the EIR is coming out, we do look at it again and comment. If we comment regardless, we kind of have a standard form that we send out. But if it is something that's either larger than we anticipated or something different than we anticipated, then we obviously will ask the put forth our our comments towards the project for the lead agency to take for whatever it's worth, I suppose.
Yeah. By the way, I did appreciate your comment last night. I can't remember if I said it, but I like the concept of having some of this in the letter, but not muddying the water supply assessment and making that ambiguous. Like, is the water supply assessment valid if they don't do permeable paving? That maybe that was your comment. Yeah. I think the separation makes it cleaner.
Yeah.
One other thing, and Rick's presentation wasn't up at the beginning, but the way the presentation's structured right now is that the Joe Byrne, you know, 6 or 7 slide, 8 slide duty to serve explanation has been compressed. I just want to make sure the committee agrees with that approach, or should we do that front end description each time with each presentation?
In my opinion, that the board's seen it, and so the thumbnail version works for me and probably for the rest of the board too.
Yeah.
As long as the duty to serve is laid out there.
Right.
And as long as he has it handy, if somebody really wants to see or bring up one of the, I know he has it all in his head, right?
A lot of the stuff that was taken out or just not in there is the, you know, the definitions of the verification and the what will serve letters and things like that, that technically don't have much to do with a water supply assessment.
Okay.
All right. The verification is part of the subdivision track map. And so it's a different schedule, and although they're related, they're a little different. And I think you're asking us to approve a water supply assessment, a lot of water supply verification, so we don't have to go into, I don't think, unless others feel differently, we don't have to go into the verification.
And obviously when we come to you with the verification that we have kind of ready, not ready to go, but that we've been asked to prepare for the Tesoro property, that language would change, and then we would get the language of, you know, what the duties are for a verification.
Thank you. Okay, and with that, is the committee willing to move this on to the board? And I don't think we're going to be able to go consent on this particular item. So, Rick, we'll see you again. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you very much. Have a good night, everybody.
Thank you, Rick.
Thank you, Rick.
Mr. Chairman,
yes.
Can I address the IT department?
Yes.
Sure. Mr. IT department, whoever you are.
Jonathan is in the room.
Oh, okay. There, okay. I see that up there. So the agency guest access, it just sits and gyrates. I can't find the internet. Just
want you to know.
They changed the password.
Yeah, we changed the password, I believe, last week.
Well, isn't that, that's not it?
That should be the new one.
Well, it's still sitting in gyrating. That's all. Thank you.
Are you okay if we move to the next agenda item, BJ? Well, this is sorted out? Or?
No, that's fine, yeah. It's just, yes. Just, he'll figure it out or we won't. It doesn't matter.
Fair enough. So with that, then we can move on to item number four, the Water Resources Director's Report. It looks like it says Dirk's going back on vacation, so it looks like Steve, are you going to sit in for him, or are we?
I'm going to try. Okay. Yeah. Big shoes to fill for sure. Yeah, I think Dirk is on his way back today from Germany. So
nice.
That was that. On the calendar schedule anyway, so we haven't heard from him, though, so that, which is a great thing. So he's hopefully enjoying himself. I kind of prepared, we'll call it a rapid fire. We just worked through a few different things. Got a lot of stuff going on in the Water Resources Department, if you can imagine. So a few of those things, we'll start with the Water Resiliency Initiative. Probably remember the board authorized a California Environmental Flow Framework contract with ESA, which is a consultant that we're using to do this work. That work is looking at flows in the river and specifically things like recycled water discharge to the river, right? And how much flow does the environment need, right? And this has been one of those questions that's always been difficult to get after, as far as how much water could you recycle out of the river. Well, there's a methodology now that you can look at that system more holistically. And so you take into account the environment and the flows that are going into it and how it's actually interacting. And so we're excited about this effort. It's just getting underway. A component of that work was to do a LIDAR survey of the system. And that LIDAR stuff has gotten really capable now. You know, the first generation was, this okay job, and then it started getting better and better. Now, I mean, you can do things like see through the water surface to the what they call the foul wig of the river, so you can actually see the bottom of kind of the river under the water, which is a key kind of understanding principle that needs to be refined. So we've got the estimate to do that. We're coordinating. The idea is to run that LIDAR survey basically from Saugus, the Saugus reclamation plant bouquet kind of area down to the bottom end of the basin. So basically the county line as it comes out. We're working right now with Five Point to get property access taken care of on their property. They have also done a lot of historical LIDAR work in their property section. So we're coordinating kind of that understanding. I think you'll see us, you know, start to develop a thing about, you know, when do you need to do that LIDAR over time? I think you do it now. You probably do it when the system resets, you know, from flood or fire or possibly drought, right?
To see how things change.
Yeah, and so then you start building that database of information over time to understand kind of the environmental values of the river system in a way that, you know, you haven't before because it's so dynamic. Yeah. So I'm excited about that. I think the team's excited about that. So I just wanted to let you know that work is going.
I know that hasn't been an issue with the GSA. So is this something to basically update the recycled water master plan to talk about water availability that is not necessary for habitat? Is that what this is for?
I think this is going to be helpful for all things.
Okay, but it didn't come before the GSA as the required element. So this was designed outside of that.
That's correct.
And it's for how much water has to stay in the river versus how much is available.
That's a major component of it, as well as looking at things like temperature, things like that. Right? There's a whole different,
like, historical temperature and impacts.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. And looking at that holistically, like, what is the right temperature for the river? You know, what other types of things are going on in that system that need to be understood better. Yeah. One of the concepts is, right now, because the way that the sanitation district plants discharge into the river system, you end up with a very, like, narrow channel. And it's warm, right? And it's narrow, and that's not necessarily great for the species that are called this river system home. So what are the ways that you could look at changing that dynamic that would benefit the environment as well as make sure that the water resources are taken care of? So it's looking at that from a holistic standpoint, a very dynamic kind of river system that we have here. So there'll be a lot more to come, and there'll be people that can speak to this a lot more technically than I can, but it's exciting, I think, work that is getting underway. You've heard the reliability model work that's going on. It's kind of in its testing phase right now. So that reliability model is basically taking the historical model that Castaic had that basically takes our water supply portfolio and operates it, models it over different hydrological year sequences. We have a staff member now that has that skill set, Najula. She is a recognized modeler, and so that's really cool to see that unfolding, and there'll be a lot more to come on that. And moving it to a new platform, which is called Goldzim, that has a lot more capability than the previous platform. So excited about that. We'll be able to eventually test different scenarios. You know, you can put Sites Reservoir in there in our portfolio and see what it does. Does it improve the situation? Does it stay the same?
Yeah.
And you can operate it that way, and it will kick out reports that show how that addition to the portfolio performs and the value of it. So that type of analysis is going to be super powerful. Groundwater banking, throw that in there. It's going to be very dynamic that way. So looking forward to that. Also, as part of the resiliency initiative, we are looking kind of at some of the groundwater basin operating components, right? So our agency has an operating plan for the alluvium and the Saugus. We're refining testing criteria to make sure that we can look at testing that operating plan in different ways. Example, if we add recharge to Castaic Creek, what does the operating plan look like in that context? So you can start to look at that. Does that improve your ability to pump groundwater? Does it help with sustainability of the groundwater dependent ecosystem? So we're going to start looking at a testing plan. You'll most likely see another scope of work coming before you all to look at those types of things in the watershed.
So that's building on an existing model? I seem to remember some other model.
It's a little bit of both. So yeah, it's using the modeling that was completed for the groundwater sustainability plan. It's kind of the operating component. Yeah. But we are evaluating whether we need a more sophisticated surface water groundwater interaction component to that model.
Sort of like modify an existing model.
Yes. So again, continually trying to refine that understanding of the interrelationship between surface and ground, I think, is going to be really important for our agency for the future. So we are starting to go down that that pathway and build upon kind of the successes we've seen on the sustainability agency stuff. AVEC, we're scheduling a staff field trip. So obviously that's still on our radar. This is the Antelope Valley East Kern groundwater banking opportunity.
So they have moved forward with the first phase, which was Metropolitan Water District. And so that is, they're constructing facilities and hopefully going to get a chance to go out there and look at that and then talk to them about the next phase as well. So again, that is still being pursued. Saugus 3 and 4, and some of these you can see, I'm focusing on some of these water resources, you know, components that we're trying to advance of our plant supplies. Saugus 3 and 4 are bid, they were bid out. The contract was awarded. The contractor is in the final stages of getting the permit to drill those wells. And those two wells will be located kind of the backside of Magic Mountain there. Cool thing about it, the pipeline will tie those wells into, which is a transmission main. Staying away from regional or division, but it's the big pipe. And when you're able to hook up to that big pipe, it can move it throughout the valley. And so that's a huge resource objective, I think, for the agency to look at that. So more to come. You know, drilling wells is its whole own thing. You got to go out and drill, and then you see what you get. But you know, we've done a lot of analysis and research to think we're putting them in a good location. Staff is also working on the groundwater sustainability agency budget, so we'll be taking that at the end of June. That's all coming together. We'll be able to present that to the groundwater sustainability agency board. Recycled water. I think we had a request at a previous board meeting for an update. So if it's okay with you all, we're preparing a presentation. I figure we'll just go straight to the board with that, not have to duplicate it for you guys here. But let me know if that's not the direction you want to head.
What was the item? I'm sorry, Steve. Next.
Recycled water. Update. So kind of
the master plan.
Yeah, I think all things recycled water. there's a lot there. You know, Sand District litigation's over. You know, just a couple of highlights. Sand District litigation's over there. We've extended our recycled water system. We're in the phases of trying to get people hooked up. We've done New Drop. There's been some real good success there with the state board, regional board. And the overall master plan, kind of what's next and how is that going to work for planning out the next phases for the agency. So quite a bit to update there.
If you could, when you do that, can you, because I missed the urban water management plan. I remember some of the urban water management plan recycled numbers were unclear because of all the complications. Can you let me know if like they're firmer now?
Yeah, we will talk about that a lot because it does get back into this, how much water do you need to, you know, take out of the river or not?
Right.
Is New Drop enough?
Okay.
We've got numbers on that. What we're projecting New Drop will provide versus do we need to access additional resources out of the sanitation
plant? We don't have to do New Drop anymore.
You still do. The sanitation district's lawsuit is right. Over. So that was a major conclusion of some major litigation that went for a long time. The issue is the issue is still a live issue as far as taking water out of
right.
The
withdrawal permit.
You need a state water resources control board 1211 permit to do that. So it's a water rights filing. And when you do that water rights filing, there is a CEQA component that has to come with it. And so the distinction with New Drop and the distinction in 1211 is it's water that has not previously hit the water course, right. You can recycle. And so that's the whole principle of what New Drop is based upon. So we're generating new wastewater from the development that has not gone to the water course yet. And so that new drop generates and it continues to generate. And we're going to reuse it. The 1211 question is still a live question. If we want to go and take additional resources out of the river that are discharged currently from the sanitation plants, that's subject to that permitting requirement. And it is a very heavy lift. The public trust doctrine gets applied in that process now.
We can still take the water that we contracted for with Sand District originally, which was 1,500 or something like that acre feet.
We can use the 450. They're in that. So that there was an original 1211 file.
Right.
With that, it identified specific places of use.
Oh, you mean like when it was the Christmas tree farm and all the, yeah, the stuff that we had in the report back then?
And if you want to go
Magic Mountain too, yeah.
And so some of those got, you know, lit up. It was the golf course. It was irrigation accounts along the way. If you want to change the place of use, it kicks you back into a 1211 process.
Oh boy,
that's the current process. So we can get the 450. If we're going to change place of use, the request is that we file another 1211 to do that.
Because those places are, most of it's gone. Yeah.
So the cool thing with New Drop is we have state board approval now for New Drop. They've recognized the process, and they have actually given us acknowledgement of that process and an amount of water that they've acknowledged through that, which is about 3,000 acre per year.
That's nice.
And that will be expanded once places of use is, you know, develop and expand.
But our original recycled water program was 10,000 acre feet a year. Yeah.
And the New Drop calculated amount is just shy of 9,000 acre foot.
At full build.
At full build.
Yeah.
So it's building over time. So I think, you know, it's a complementary approach. And that's why I still think this California Environmental Flow Framework is a very valuable effort for this agency,
because
that would be what's the LIDAR is the actual way that you talk through the appropriate flow in the river, and that document will provide the key to open up the 1211 discussion. That's how we see that.
The 9,000 acre feet figure includes New Hall Ranch water reclamation plant and supply to New Hall Ranch.
It does. Okay.
So it would take care of our 2A, 2C, and 2D projects also.
And we probably are getting too far, too far in the weeds, but I just wanted to give you a heads up. That's coming. We'll have a nice presentation for the board and go through that.
When will that be presented, do you think, to the board?
It's probably going to come, I would guess, like second meeting in July.
Okay.
Last thing that I had just real quickly, Bokeh Canyon, we continue to work on that. The releases for Bokeh Canyon, there was another meeting that was held. Not a huge amount of update other than we're still working with CDFW and the county. The CDFW is actually showing a lot of leadership, I think. This has been a unique experience where the regulator is actually helping work through some of the challenges. They see the value of the restoration of that creek and the releases. And so they are a true partner in this, in approaching the Wildlife Conservation Boards for grant funding. So that is the approach right now. Our agency is participating in that and helping lead that. We have approached Congressman Garcia for some federal matching funding for the basically getting the project shovel ready. That's where everybody's moving now. And he has included that on an appropriations request. So we're still working through the final pieces of that, what that can look like and how much that can look like. So, exciting news there. It's moving, it's getting legs.
Construction on the LARC pipeline.
Yes.
When do we expect that to begin?
Soon, I think. I'll get you the date.
Within the next couple of months, or?
Yeah, that's my understanding. Yeah,
that's good.
I think that's my understanding is to go this year.
Supposed to go this year and be done by end of next year. Yeah.
All right. And by the way, it looks like you're going to continue to be able to work with Congressman Garcia's office. He got reelected last night.
Well,
not
to the primary.
One step. But anyway, I before you leave that, Steve, just you'll know I was able to take another tour, and below the Cloquet Reservoir is completely full to the gills, and they're having to discharge more water, and they've increased flow. It's probably 30% higher flow than it's been just 60 days ago. And there's no more water flowing on the road than there ever was. In other words, it's actually moving further towards Lark Ranch. Mm-hmm. It's percolating in further down, not that much further down, but some. And it's the point I'm trying to make is that the creek is scouring itself the way it would normally morph. And that's what's been described. That's the nature of the restoration that we've been discussing, and it's working in real time. That's the point I'm making.
Wow. Did they increase the flow on purpose to do that?
They had to, because the reservoir is, they have to jettison some water.
Where did the water come?
Oh, it's from the different rains, events we've had. And there's that, that's not, that's an in-stream reservoir, isn't it?
Yeah, it's watershed, I guess.
It's watershed, but then it's water also that comes from the Avery Reservoir up.
Okay.
Towards Bishop.
Yeah, it's connected to their, it's connected to the DWP's.
That's what I was wondering, right, if they filled it to.
So it's full, and they're jettisoning more water, and that's good. It's just, it would be really good if it were restored and a functioning stream, I guess, as it was originally. But that's kind of the overall goal. It'll take some years and time to get there.
Can I ask?
So we're moving in the right direction. That's exciting. Sorry.
Sorry.
No, I'm good.
What is Fish and Wildlife excited about specifically? Is there a certain species or something that
three spine unarmored three spine stickleback? That's a very complicated discussion. Probably shouldn't get into too much, but there's a unpure UTS in there. It's partially armored.
That's right.
Oh.
And so the idea is to actually eradicate that and then have pure strain.
Because I was telling Tom Bunn when we rode our bikes up there, people used to fish there. And obviously they weren't fishing for the stickleback, though. They stocked the creek, probably.
That's where they think the unpure strain came from, was the stocking activity.
Oh.
Because they have an incidence of when the hatchery had flooded and it pushed that species in there, the armored three spine stickleback. And then they were stocking trout and armored three spine stickleback in the watershed.
Yeah.
So there's a whole genetic analysis of what's going on up in that stretch of the creek. So
complicated.
It's very complicated.
Are they actually thinking of eradicating the partially armored in the Bokeh Canyon drainage?
Pretty easy to do.
Yes.
Yeah, you could shut off the water, but you'd also kill a bunch of trout.
Bluestone.
Well, nobody cares about trout, probably.
Those will be yet to be determined as the restoration plan becomes defined.
It's interesting that they're thinking that they're going to get UTS up in the drainage when it actually would rather be down towards Lark Ranch on the flat. That's their habitat.
Well, that's part of the restoration, I think, is getting further down to the water.
Watershed. All right.
But that will be coming into focus here as it gets more defined. And that's it.
Okay.
I was trying to be rapid fire, but it didn't go quite rapid fire.
That's a committee can be so pesky. Any public comments on item number four, rather?
It does not appear so.
Okay. Thank you. And I think the committee has already asked questions, so I'm going to move on to item number five, the sustainability manager's report. Ed Diggins.
Hello, can you guys see me okay?
Yep.
All right, wonderful. It's a pleasure to be with the committee tonight. Thank you, Chair Ford. Again, Matt Dickens here, Sustainability Manager. In my update on conservation activities and performance reports, I provided some overviews of current conservation projects. Those are specific to our standard or our active conservation programs, including, which is very exciting, both because it's back, the program is starting to churn out some results again, but also at a time when we're in a stage two drought shortage paradigm, we're looking to save 15%. So there's some crossover there, but nonetheless, multifamily apartment project, we do have 530 ultra high efficiency toilets scheduled for rebate with that program here in June. That program to date has saved almost 200 million gallons of water with just six apartment complexes participating. So we anticipate that these 530 toilets will bring another additional 10 million gallons of savings per year, which we're very excited about because these typically are replacing very old toilets, inefficient toilets with a high probability of leaks. So expect to see that rebate process through in June or perhaps July, depending on when the paperwork comes in and we can conduct our post-inspection. We've also been very busy in our lawn replacement program. I'd be happy at some point also to, again, to review and share the logic model of that project. But the logic model shows, again, the agency's resources, its inputs, outputs, outcomes, and impacts. And one of the things that's very critical to the success of the agency's lawn replacement program 2.0 is working with advisory groups to develop community champions so that we have supply chain support as well as customer engagement support from soup to nuts, essentially. And so in this case, we did launch our industry advisory group, which had folks from the manufacturing industry, large landscape contractor industry, local irrigation supply houses to discuss various different issues and to look for opportunities for solutions and collaboration to help promote the lawn replacement program, specifically to CII customers as well as to HOA customers. Further, our team has met numerous times with about four different homeowner association management firms in the Valley to start developing protocols to help them not only manage the landscape that they manage and help them convert the lawn that they would like to convert for their sites, but also to start helping develop protocols and streamline processes for their customers and the residents that are served by those HOAs. It's our estimation that about 60% of the Valley has an HOA. And the reason why that's important is part of the lawn replacement program, HOAs still have a play a vital role in approving landscape designs through their architectural review boards. And so what we want to do is work with, folks inside that industry to develop clear, concise, streamlined processes to help them adopt and adapt into their CC&R so they can help our customers, their residents, convert their landscapes to water-efficient, drought-tolerant, low-water-use plants and native plants. So both of those meetings are going really well, and we find ourselves with open door opportunities to continue to collaborate with those two advisory groups. I imagine the next month we'll see a supply chain advisory group launch, which will include our nurseries, local landscape designers, and other folks. So turning to our sustainability programs, some real exciting news here. We did, late last year, a few months ago, we were authorized to move forward with a contract to work with Terra Verde Energy to apply for our self-generation incentive program projects. Those two projects include battery storage and photovoltaics at Earl Schmidt Filtration Plant, as well as about a 2-megawatt battery at the Rio Vista Water Treatment Plant. We did submit our applications for SGIP funding, and we were able to get both of the reservations confirmed through the Southern California Gas Company for about $1.6 million in incentive funding for those projects, which should cover roughly about half Now, this does not mean that the projects have been approved and that we are going to construction. What it means is that our reservation of those funds has been confirmed for both of those projects. They approve of the outline of the project, the scope of the project, and now those funds have been taken out of that common resource pool and reserved for our project. Should we choose not to move forward, those monies would be put back into the program pool, and we would receive our deposit back, which was 5% of the SGIP value. But we're really excited that both those projects have been confirmed. We're working with our consultant to develop RFP documentation to start looking at going to bid to develop those two sites. And the board will eventually have an opportunity to approve whatever outcome of that endeavor is. And then finally, this is also very exciting because we've been working with this firm for quite a while to, through and during and throughout and after pandemic. And essentially, this is a demand response program, which is another great opportunity for us to collaborate and to leverage our sizable electric demand loads to essentially receive rebates when we choose to voluntarily reduce our electric demands during a call by the electric utility. And so we went through a very robust analysis of all of our sites. We identified 39 sites that we could feasibly do a 1 to 2 hour reduction window for a total curtailable kilowatt reduction of 4,741 kilowatts, which we believe would have an annual estimated incentive about $240,000. Now, that's kind of the best in case scenario. We all know that some calls will come in and we can't respond to them because our priority at that point in time may be something else. And so with that said, that's kind of what we anticipate our cap. Now, conversely, it could also be more than that if we have more eligibility or ability to respond to these demand calls. Nonetheless, we see that there's about $240,000 in annual incentives available through this program by us just shutting down certain appurtenances during those demand response calls. And we're going to further evaluate a one-time customer rebate of $950,000. So our team's expected this is a collaboration opportunity with us, sustainability, water resources, and operations. This team will be meeting in a few weeks here to launch the project. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions the committee may have.
First, any questions from members of the public for item 5?
It does not appear so.
Thank you. So with that, questions from members of the committee for Matt? Director Goodside.
Two things. On the lawn replacement, and I can talk to you a little bit offline, Matt, too, but I continue to think if we can find a way to make it more step-by-step for homeowners, I know there's going to be a lot of interest in it, but, you know, for instance, I'll just give a personal example. We had a tenant just decide they were going to improve their sprinklers. Didn't tell me. Didn't check which rebate nozzles were available. You know, they just did it. And then after the fact, I had to figure out which ones were eligible, which wasn't entirely clear. So if there was like, when you're working with these groups of contractors, you know, here's the thing you hand them, you know, find a contractor. Here's our nozzle list. Check your nozzle list before you buy anything, you know, more step by step. Or, oh, do you have problems from one of our audits? Here's what you do next. Like, I also had a water audit and they're like, well, this sprinkler's tipped or, you know, now what? I mean, yeah, I have some interest in it, but if you have like person that's strapped on time, they don't take that extra step. Like I feel like we need to continue to make it easier for them to take the next step, like do this, you know, check this little box off, you know, almost like a little to-do list at Christmas or whatever. Because I think people have good intentions, especially now, but then they get overwhelmed. Like, I don't know which is a good contractor. I don't know. Like, this sprinkler nozzles were kind of buried under some other title. Like, I couldn't find it right away. But if there's like, look here for your sprinkler nozzles, I think that if we can work on that, I think that would be good. I know I've said that before. And then the other thing on the battery storage, just a question, what is the purpose for that? Because I know batteries don't run as long as generators typically. So are we trying to prepare for outages with the batteries, or are they to let us run off of solar at times like when it's dark? You know, is it a daily use battery or is it an emergency use battery that we're looking at?
Director Gutzeit, thank you for the comments. Regarding the first comment, I'll check in with the team. I believe we have robust step-by-step processes for customers to partake in these programs. Certainly can be complicated when you're talking about educating non-experts, irrigation experts on the process. It can be tough. I myself, even as much knowledge as I have, which I'm going to chuckle a little bit there at, I went to the supply house 10 times because I kept forgetting the wrong, you know, to bring the right thing. So it doesn't matter who you are. You know, try to get the checklist and make as good of notes as you possibly can when you're doing this part. So I appreciate that. And we'll certainly look further into that. Regarding the battery storage functionality, the batteries were designed and sized to be able to withstand what we believe to be most PSPS events, so that they would be coupled with, so there's many uses. There's both uses in normal operations. There's rate functionality that we can operate these things to create islanding effects and what's called rate arbitrage, where we essentially can load those batteries when power is cheap, and consume that power when it's cheap, and then unload them and use that power when power goes up, so that we're kind of creating rate arbitrage for ourselves and kind of make a beneficial demand reduction plan that is not really a technical demand reduction effort, even though it has demand reduction, it wouldn't interrupt those operations. And then there's emergency capabilities. So it has multiple functions associated with it. How it ultimately is utilized will require, I believe, both some expert opinion and insight into various different rate profiles and use profiles, then also with agency policy priorities.
Yeah. Okay, good. Thank you.
Yep.
I'll just add one thing. Both the facilities that these are being considered at have backup power.
They already have it in terms of generator.
Yes.
So this is a lot what he was talking about, like rate management and...
But it will, like in a PS there.
Because that's short.
Yeah, there's enough to just do the battery and not turn on the generator.
Right, so that's like a four.
But if it's a major emergency, the generator is still
there. Right, if it was down for a week.
Those are diesel generators, I think.
Well, I believe the one at Earl Schmidt, I mean at Rio Vista, I believe is diesel, but at Earl Schmidt is gas. And then we just installed
The new generator at Earl Schmidt is gas powered.
Natural gas.
Yeah. That's why SoCalGas is playing here. And they're willing to ante up money. I'm trying to put the dots together, Matt, on why.
Good question.
What's the logic?
So the logic is when the CPUC awarded these funds, they gave them to all the various different energy utility agencies across the state. So our project came in after Southern California Edison's round of funding had been reserved. So we were out of the energy side, SCE side of the funding, which would have given us also more opportunities in more places. However, we just happened to luck out and be fortunate that the two sites that were included in the project had gas accounts. But those gas monies that the CPUC gave to the Southern California Gas Company, as well as other gas utilities, were coming down to the we were getting down to the wire. So it's really exciting that we got through this round because we got the higher eligibility of funding, incentive funding. The next round gets lower and it gets lower and it gets lower. So, we got in a very good time at this juncture. I would also add, though, to the, possibility for future that if we're able to demonstrate that our battery technologies were able to provide energy reliability without having to turn those generators on, that in itself may be eligible for future funding of credits and whatnot from programs. So there's lots of opportunities there, like I said, but ultimately when it comes down to how we utilize that, that's a decision that we need to analyze a little further and then also check in with agency policy decision-making processes.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Dr. Cooper.
Hey, Matt. One of the things the governor talked about is the removal of non-functional turf. And what is that? What are we doing on that? I mean, we've got places here in the Valley that there's a great deal of non-functional turf. If you look at CalArts and COC and some of those, what's our position on it? What are we planning on doing?
Director Cooper, that's a great question. And as you're aware, the State Water Resources Control Board on the 24th of May adopted the Emergency Regulations 2018-0018, which included a ban on non-functional turf, specifically that does not comply or conform to water-efficient turfs and grasses that use one-third of the reference evapotranspiration and can verify 40%. So they did some modifications, and they just released the final regulations, and our goal is to fully review those, conduct an analysis with our legal team, our management, and with the agency to determine how to best implement that. What we do know is that in the governor's ban, he called for the State Water Resources Control Board to consider banning. They actually banned it at the state level, though they did not put enforcement capabilities at the state level. They're essentially saying that local water agencies can enforce this ban and leaving it up to the agencies to decide respectively. So that decision-making process, and I think that implementation of that still needs to be vented, and we're looking into it. And so I would hope to have something to report after I have an opportunity to meet with Matt and Steve and others for a effective implementation that could utilize this in a most beneficial manner for our customers.
Great, thank you.
Mr. Is that retroactive? Like, is that's not new installations? It's like if you have existing turf, it is banned.
You got to go.
That's interesting, and I agree. The school districts are huge.
School grass. Yeah, CalArts has grassy hills, knolls. Yeah. It's non-functional. It's not like they hold any kind of event on those.
Well, even in the elementary schools, just acres of grass that the kids just walk across. It's not their play fields. It's
just green.
Yeah.
So, and the other thing I would note is that it's non-functional turf that's irrigated with potable water, which is another important distinction, that turf that's irrigated with recycled water at this time is exempt from the non-functional turf call. So, we do have recycled water projects that will be intending to irrigate turf grasses in those common areas. But again, I think we need to, look at that policy. This is a surprise, as you can imagine, to many of our customers who have not planned to remove such large areas or not really sure what to do or how to do it. And so what we want to do is understand the rule, the opportunity, and then perhaps there's a great collaboration and leadership opportunity for the agency here to connect some grant funding or other types of funding to help lead our customers into a more sustainable landscape palette for those non-functional turf areas. But again, we still need to vent that out, and I think we will in the coming weeks.
No other questions from the committee, Matt. I was wondering, the PUC is contemplating a change to net energy metering. Does that in any way affect our return on investment for the battery projects? And I guess it should be, the potential solar panels at Schmidt.
Yeah, Director Ford, it certainly could. We're hoping that we can get these account and projects retroactive in the current net metering tariff. But we're watching that story very closely, and if there is an impact, we need to evaluate that quickly and understand its impact on our performa.
Okay, good. I'm glad you're tracking it. No other questions from members of the committee for Matt? Thank you, Matt. You're again for item 5.2. So the status of the drought response and performance. Please go when you're ready.
Can you see my screen?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Well, here we go. We're going to talk about the drought, and this is our monthly update on the status of drought response and performance here in the Valley. Let me move this off here. There we go. So our presentation tonight, we'll look at regulatory status and mandates, SCV water, drought ready, our demand performance, next steps, and then we'll conclude with question and answers. I grabbed this rain from Northern California, Sierra, precipitation 8-station index. And as you can see, we're below average, but a little bit better than we were in previous years in terms of rainfall this year. We got a little bit here at the end, but real concerned about this dry period between January and April. This is where we get a lot of rainfall in that time. And this year, we really kind of flatlined. So turning to regulatory status, and I appreciate the discussion we've had already. So some of this might seem a little redundant as it's covered in this section as opposed to the sustainability manager's report. There's been a lot of activity from the state regarding regulatory, and more specifically is the 2022-0018 adopted emergency regulations, which prohibits non-functional turf, irrigation of non-functional turf with potable water for commercial, industrial, institutional customers, as well as HOA and common interest developments. Although there were some exemptions that were added following the meeting on the 24th, specifically those that are for low, drought tolerant grasses and other types of grass that can be irrigated at drought native plant levels. It also required that agencies with water shortage contingency plans implement stage two or measures of their water shortage contingency plan that are can achieve savings up to 20% as identified in the water shortage contingency plan. It also has prescriptive measures for agencies, more prescriptive measures for agencies that do not have water shortage contingency plans. So once again, it's very beneficial that our agency completed that in advance of the current drought. A lot of agencies that have not have, they're required to do what's prescribed in the emergency regulation because they don't have a shortage plan. And as you recall, that shortage plan process is about an 8 to 12 month process. So I don't see many agencies who haven't started the process or in the process getting through it relatively quickly. So they'll have to fall under the prescriptive measures of the emergency regulation. And then also on April 26th, as we know, SCV Water enacted stage two of its water shortage contingency plan and ordinance. So turning to the water shortage contingency plans and ordinance, so we've been through this before, but it's always good to kind of circle back. And for those on the call, it's good to understand how these strategies work together to help our agency. Not only the water shortage contingency plan has two kind of primary functions amongst others, but two primary functions. One is to mitigate any potential water shortage, or essentially to avoid ever having a water shortage. The other benefit is to be prepared should a supply shortage occur. So two of those things are happening simultaneously so that we are prepared for to serve our customers in support of our agency's mission. We do have drought sustainable actions. These are conservation programs that we are persistently working on, whether we're in drought or not. So we call it drought sustainable. We have deployed supply augmentation. Unused supplies from previous years have been stored. So thanks to conservation and water efficiency, but also to very strategic planning and foresight, we have supplies that we can deploy to augment those shortages that we're seeing in the State Water Project supply, which is currently in its second year being allocated at 5%. We have drought-specific programs, messaging and outreach, engagement. What's the difference? Messaging and outreach is kind of your high-level message to connect the community to the drought situation, the drought status, the impacts, kind of the big picture, whereas engagement really looks at more one-on-one work with customers to help improve water use efficiency, eliminate waste, and accomplish whatever our customers' conservation goals are. And then you have restrictions and additional measures. And together, these all work in tandem to help our agency, our customers achieve up to 20% voluntary conservation when we're in stage two drought shortage. So our stage two programs, we have lawn replacement rebates, which have been updated and, improved, stacked rebates, increased economic incentives, new support opportunities, supply chain development, CCNR support with HOAs that's in the process. So we're working. There's also the ability for landscape contractors to bill incrementally and or to for customers to direct their rebate go to a licensed landscape contractor to, again, reduce barriers, but also help customers move through their projects more quickly and perhaps have less out-of-pocket expenses. We have drought-ready checkups, smart controller rebates, help rebates, drip conversion rebates, irrigation checkups, online workshops, education classes. We have not only an award-winning program, but one of the most robust conservation programs in the state, if not country, and perhaps across the planet. We'll toot our horn there. So regarding water waste restrictions, these things are common water, waste activities that are easy to solve and can save quite a bit of water. That's allowing runoff, washing cars without hose nozzles, using water to wash down sidewalks instead of a broom, irrigating during within 48 hours of measurable rainfall, the fountains without recirculating pumps, and watering turf on public medians. These are the current active water waste restrictions. And then we have watering restrictions, which are, days per week watering, which are also, they were designed kind of in the time when, prior to smart controllers and the proliferation of smart controllers, I think most people had irrigation systems that was either manually turned on or had some sort of, analog irrigation timer. And so these systems have long-term, this type of practice has been for quite a while a water conservation mechanism because it helps kind of balance out irrigation to a certain number of days. So you're looking at irrigation reduction. Most landscapes can be okay with this type of schedule. It's enforceable, and it also, provides some more reliability and less drastic impacts on the supply system. We've seen sometimes water hammering effects when the other systems, overload watering on a certain day on one day and instead of kind of trying to balance the system. So in this case, our program, it reduces to 3 days per week, no watering on Saturdays. We have 2 5-minute cycles. That's a smart practice for our community because of the sloping, but also because of the clay soils. So most customers reduce to 2 5-minute cycles on these days. This is specific for turf grass. They can maintain, the amount of water that is required for those plants in peak summer months. A little bit of deficit irrigating, but if they do this instead of running just 10 minutes, at 10 minutes, half your water, 5 minutes, is going to typically run off. So in this case, we're getting 2 5-minute. You're looking at no runoff, more of the water being absorbed into the soil. So it's a smart practice to help customers with better outcomes. And then we have time of day restrictions, watering times, to help customers, again, put that water to work instead of losing it to evaporation. We supply a lot of information to our customers. We gave out numerous copies of the schedule here in magnets, but also that were accompanied with our drought bulletin, which went out last week. And we have, this certainly did what our intentions were, which was to provide credible, up-to-date, specific information relative to SCV Water's current drought, stage two drought, water shortage contingency plan and ordinance. As you know, there's been a lot of news shed. That's essentially where we have news from Metropolitan Water District and its state water project dependent areas, conflating with LADWP's 2-day-per-week watering, 1-day-per-week watering, and all of that starts to get pretty confusing for our customers. And so what we wanted to do was have a bulletin that was very succinct, very simple that just provided an overview of what is applicable and what is in plant here in the valley. So, you know, the bulletin's very quick, easy to read. It identifies that we're asking everybody to prohibit water waste, water restrictions, water no more than these days. Violations and penalties are specific to mostly, in most cases, those cases that are so egregious are education. It says, for example, here, SCV Water's conservation goals focus on education and engagement. This is under violations and penalties. We encourage customers to take immediate action to eliminate water waste and reduce irrigation use to avoid penalties. So again, our goal is to provide this information so succinctly so that customers have it, because we do not want to issue fines or tickets or violation notices. We would rather customers have the right information that's credible to us, specific to us, so that they can take those actions. We can accomplish our savings goals through the reduction in irrigation use and also the elimination of water waste. And then we have a number of programs. The entire back is dedicated to the programs that we offer customers through our robust conservation program portfolio. All right, so on to SCV water demand performance. We're going to look at normal conservation drought response targets here. I do want to provide an overview kind of LA County. This was LA County taken during last month's update. And as you can see, we were mostly in category D3 here. But if we look at how we're moving this month, we're starting to see those drought conditions, that extreme category. We were in D2 severe drought for most of the county. Now we're starting to see the extreme drought conditions start to drop. So once again, our valley here in SCV is split between category D2, kind of down here, just north of what looks like the 14. And on I-5, we're in extreme drought conditions. So let's look at some weather data. This is the blend of data from CineStation 204, but also from some other rain indexes. And this is in response to, I think Director Cooper asked for water year to date information. So we are reporting both of those. For evapotranspiration, we actually had a cooler May than we had in 2020. Evapotranspiration rates were down 2%. And year to date, we saw it come down a little bit to up 18.9%. So yeah, slightly cooler May. That's good news for irrigation users, particularly those who have a lot of smart controllers or using soil moisture sensors or irrigating really in tune with weather. So that's going to help us start to see some less demands, I guess. But here we are in a very hot, dry period. Precipitation for May, we had no rain. Calendar year to date, we're down 77% compared to 2020. And again, I compared to 2020 because that's what the 15%, the governor's 15% voluntary conservation call compares us to. So we want to kind of look at that and say, wait a second, our usage is up 40%, but our irrigation our precipitation is down 70% and our irrigation needs are up 20%. You can start to see how that all starts to pan out when you normalize it with weather data. However, water year to date, much different picture because of that very wet October and December we had. We're only down 12% compared to our average water year. So calendar year impacts the irrigation numbers. Water year kind of shows us that, yeah, we had some good precipitation early on, and we're not too far below our average rain. Then we look at temperatures. May, again, slightly cooler, 81.2 degrees average max air temp versus May 2020 of 84.3. So a little bit lower irrigation demands. And we can see that in our normal conservation. So again, this is if we were to take our gallon per capita day under the previous SBX 7-7, 20% reduction in gallon per capita day by 2020, and we're just to extrapolate it out and say, okay, how about today's population at a 24% reduction? And this is an interim plan. It's really to show us how we're proceeding between the end of that last legislative mandate to what's going to be required of us starting in 2024. So any conservation gains we get during this time is great for the agency as we start to set up for what's called the conservation long-term framework as prescribed in AB 1668 SB 606. So the black dashed line is today's population at the baseline gallon per capita day of 274 gallons per person per day. And the dotted line is today's population at a 24% of that. So, and then we have our monthly production. In January, we were below. In February and March, we were above, almost at the pre-baseline levels. In April, we fell below slightly. And in May, we were below what we planned. And this plan is based off of 30 years of water delivery statistics that we use. So we can kind of look at it. Well, here we are so far through May. We're only 3.7% above our plan. And that's from that really dry February and March. We're starting to see it come down. And that 3.7% is roughly about 846 acre feet. So we're starting to see it come down. We continue to have performance like this. This number is going to shrink and hopefully get into a negative territory. However, when we look at the 15% of 2020, we're looking at a whole different frame of reference statistically, but also just a different baseline. Instead of the gallon per capita day and population normalization, you just take the year and you say, okay, what's in the months and what's 15% of those? And so here we have the blue bar is 2020's production, the brown bar is 2022, and the dashed line is 15% of 2020. So we were below January, in January, we were slightly below 2020, then we went up, way over in March and April. But the reason why is you can see this cratered use here, I call it a crater. Basically, that's due to rainfall. Yeah. So we had rainfall in these months, and that suppressed these demands because irrigation demands were dropped. So they weren't required. They weren't used in those months. However, this year they were, and we can see that they were. But look at May. May, we're starting to get negative again over 2020. We're not quite to the 15%, but we're starting to see a different trend compared to 2020. So May was a pretty good month, both from normal conservation perspective, as well as from the voluntary 15% of 2020, which is good news. This is a more statistics. I'm a statistics dork. I really like kind of analyzing these trending analysis, statistics analysis, and trying to understand the mathematics of stuff. And it gets really wild when you're applying it to social sciences. But anyway, the water usage here, we can see the monthly usage dating back to January 2021 all the way to May 2022. This blue line is difference per month in percent. So if you're over 100%, if you're below 100%, that means you're below that 2020 period. And then the cumulative is the orange line. And then there's the dashed line shows us 100%. And then this dashed line says that's the 15% voluntary conservation call. And the shaded area, if you can see that, is the compliance period dating back to July of 2022. So we're really looking at this, but it's good to kind of give a little perspective. It looks much like a ride at Magic Mountain, ups and downs and kind of, you know, particularly the seasonal volatilities. For example, look in December. We were 71.2% of 2020's levels. That's because of that rain. But then we shot up to 100, you know, over 60, about 62% of 2020's levels in March, dropped to 47.4% in April. And then in May, look at this. This is great news here. We've dropped to 95.8%. So we are down 4.2% compared to 2020 for the month of May, which I believe suggests that the news, one of the things that we were missing, this drought cycle, whether it's through demand hardening or crisis fatigue or confusion. Nonetheless, the whole goal is to try to get the message clear, succinct, and start, you know, having customers understand in a very easy way what we're asking, what's required, what is needed to do, what the drought situation is. And I think that we're starting to see some of that start to pick up here. But we also were helped by the weather. So cooler weather helps as well. Our cumulative conservation went down 1%. We were 5% over. So we started, let's look at the period here for the whole time. We started in July of 2021 at 5.6% over cumulative of 2020. We dropped down in December to 3% below that orange line here. So we went from 5.6% to 3% below, which is a trend change of about 8.6%. Then we went up to 5% over, which is a change of 8%. So we had lost all of our conservation savings, cumulative savings, but now we're trending back downward. So this is, again, May was a better performance month, conservation speaking, but we're certainly keeping our eyes and ears to the ground and continuing to engage with our customers in meaningful and impactful ways. How does that savings compare to the state? Well, you know, in April, we can see that statewide conservation was up. So usage was up 17.6%. For the South Coast, it was 25.6%. For us, it was 47.4%. And cumulative was 5% compared to a negative 1% or up 0.1% for the South Coast and down 2%. So, I mean, you know, we're higher, significantly higher than the South Coast. We are in a microclimate of the South Coast as well. So I might want to add more context to this instead of trying to compare us to all the South Coast agencies, because some communities like Santa Monica and Long Beach and whatnot have, you know, very low changes in their very low effects of the irrigation effect on their usage, whereas ours is higher, you know, much higher, much different than those climate zones and hydrologic zones. So I'll take a deeper dive, but nonetheless, it shows us that while we were significantly above in March and April, we're starting to trend back downwards in May. And that was kind of the trend across the state. So actions and next steps. In June, we have increased community engagement, performance communications, conservation messaging. We also have our large multifamily ultra-high efficiency toilet rebate installation on the radar. We're still continuing to develop drought-ready videos to help our customers kind of develop real quick messages and job aids to help folks get right to the information they need. July and August, we'll see a significant lawn replacement marketing push with an objective of trying to shoot for fall planting and fall participation. The best time to plant and the lowest impact of water usage is around the fall. And then also continued performance monitoring and adaptive management. So with that, I thank you for your time, and I'll be happy to answer any questions the committee may have.
Thank you, Matt. Any public comments on item 5.2? Other than Uni.
Sorry, Uni.
Yes, Uni.
Uni has a question.
Hi, Uni. One moment, please, while I start the timer.
She just had a heavy
accident. Let's see.
I would put that at a 99% chance that she had a heavy thumb.
Uni, did you have a comment?
No.
Okay. Questions from members of the committee for Matt?
That was a lot of information. No.
Yep.
Hi. If you guys don't have comments. I'm going to try again. I'm going to see if maybe I did send a lot of offline comments, as you know, and I know Steve and I talked about it. I still think it's confusing. I know we have professionals on board, but can we consider like a homeowner, a committee, you know, maybe? Yeah, I mean, I know you're talking to HOAs, right? But, you know, some homeowners or something. Because I have people. Constantly have people ask me, what the heck, you know, what do? We have to do this? What, you know, what about drip? I looked at the website. I found it confusing. I just would ask some regular people for input on this. And also maybe like a FAQ thing, like we did with the GSA. You know, if we keep getting questions over and over again, you know, maybe they need to see it in a different format. If it's in there, you know, buried in a policy somewhere, but everybody keeps asking over and over again, maybe we need an FAQ page. you know, we're the, I mean, well, month versus annual, it is interesting to us, but, you know, one of my questions was, you know, what do we have to compare to? By the year end, we need that cumulative number, right, Matt? The orange line is really the line we're concerned with.
I mean, they're both, Director Goodsite, they're both informative to the state. The monthly can have, you know, it tells a story of your ground truthing, and the cumulative kind of puts it in context of the compliance period performance. It is confusing, and I completely understand. I was recently asked to speak at a conference with up in Sacramento last week. And, you know, many questions came up that we hear quite a bit. And I had an opportunity to sit down and speak with folks from the state and ask, what's the bottom line? Are you going to be changing the 15% of 2020 now that you've asked for measures up to 20%? Should we be reporting 20%? And the questions, they're just really not great answers to that. So turning to us, what we do know is that we have to report 15% of 2020. That's a fact. And that's, we have to report that to the State Water Resources Control Board. And then when we turn to our shortage plan, it really talks about we're in the stage to get up to 20% savings, which 15% falls within. But really we're asking folks to not waste water and to reduce their irrigation use to accomplish these savings. And why we're asking to do that. Those are short-term things. Long-term things, we're asking for sustainable landscape transformation and more technology and behavioral embedded conservation, water efficiency, ethic, tactics and policies and practices and programs to accomplish more sustainable demands. So those two things are kind of in our paradigm right now, but more specifically, with the drought bulletin, it's fairly clear, don't waste water and water on, you know, water minimally.
Yeah, no, I get it. It's just, I mean, even that, like the sustainable ethic and all that, I love that. And I think people would love that tone, like, but I just feel like, you know, it's 15%, it's 20%, is it all year? You know, is it compared to what year? It's like, if you start looking, it gets really messy really fast. And I almost feel like if we just got people to go, let's see what we can do, let's help out, you know, I think they would be more compliant and more, you know, as opposed to feeling like a failure because it didn't rain this March and it did rain in March 2020. It's like, oh, look at how bad March was or whatever. You know, if they're looking at the charts, they're going to get like discouraged. I don't know. I just feel like we're regular person friendly.
Do you think people look at that stuff? I mean, if you tell them you can water Monday, Wednesday, Friday, that's really all they care about.
Well, no, but, you know, I feel like if, I mean, and there was that op-ed that Gary Horton wrote in the paper. I mean, we all get our bills. You know, if you want us to save 20%, who cares what day of week we water? If we save 20%, here's our bill. You know, is the water district happy if they watered 5 days a week but cut their water use 30%? Is that a win, or is that like shame on you? You know, your neighbor called. I would call it a win.
No, I think it's still a win because we're not going to check that.
Right, but they feel like a bad person for not, maybe. I don't know. Maybe people don't care.
Well, you know, I mean, we did that. We did that. I don't want to say poll. What is it when you get a group of people?
Did you ask the Blue Ribbon Committee?
No. I mean, a focus group years ago about water and this was during the drought in '94, and people didn't care.
They didn't care if you told them 3 days.
No, they didn't. No, they just said, just tell us what we got to do, and that's what we'll do. And they said, don't show us pictures of kids running in the parks and water. And they said, show us the bad stuff. Show us the dried up lakes and if you're going to advertise to us. But outside of that, they didn't care. They didn't know where they were getting their water from when we had all the water cuts.
Yeah.
They really didn't know. They really didn't care. It was a pretty interesting focus group because it's we think that we care. That's right. Why we're here.
If I may, this is a great conversation. We are this term is important not just for our customers but also for our industry. You know, is drought as a term as impactful as it once was, if it's the right. norm? Right. I think there are certain questions we do need to ask and kind of gauge do thermometer gauge testing and acceptability testing in our community. And so fortunately, we are working on that effort while we're moving forward for future long-term conservation and future benefits. But I would say that, you know, at this point in time, as the plan was approved and as we're implementing it, we are trying to communicate that as clearly as possible to customers. And I'm certainly empathetic to concerns about how do I measure my performance? How do I know that I'm doing well? I wrote a calculator that kind of goes through some of that exercise, which you have to have 20/20 usage. But even then it gets a little bit murky. For example, say you were a large amusement park that shut down in 2020 because of COVID. And we said you have to save 15% of your usage when you were closed. Now we're talking about, okay, how do we really get something across that's meaningful and impactful? And I think we do need to, you know, get our, you know, understand the big picture. How are we performing as a community and get that to be the message? Because right. that's where it's really going to be effective. If we have to dive deeper, we need to certainly understand ways to do that. That's equitable and fair across the board and serves our customers. So right. I think there's more discussion to be had, but I am comfortable that the drought bulletin was effective and clear.
I think that's the long-term engagement, right? So obviously some supposed amusement park might have been concerned, like, what are we going to do here? Same, a lady in a condo might be concerned. What are they going to do? We need to, you know, have that answer for them. You know, does the lady in the condo have to cut her bill, or do we look for a community-wide conservation? And, you know, the large landscapes can do a lot. We're engaging with them more. You know, that kind of discussion, I think, is what's next. And I just would like to see us, you know, get some volunteers, you know, from the grocery store or something. Hey, can you understand this website? And, you know, down the road, because I think we will need it for a long time. And it should be as user-friendly as possible.
Great. Thanks for those comments and great discussion.
Any questions for Matt? No. Matt, on the bills, we still have tell customers, I think they're efficient or super efficient. Or has that been changed at all as a result of us going to stage two or any of our drought programs?
Okay, that's a really good question. And we do have budget water efficiency targets for about half of our customers, residential, and about half dedicated irrigation. We do not yet have the capability for all customers to have that detailed level, though it is on our not too distant future. As we've merged now, I believe we're close to or have completed the migration of our customer information system. Now we can start to add one of our last customer service areas into that system and that program. But the curious thing there is that those are very valuable pieces of information, but those are normalized budgets. Would be very different than what we would be talking about during a shortage. Not to say we couldn't use that tool to communicate shortage. We have not used that tool to communicate shortage targets or drought conservation targets. Those conservation targets are specific to normal years. So we're saying people 55 gallons per person per day, your landscape times the evapotranspiration rate for that specific month. And as you know, that this year, if you followed the water budget, you would have usage off the charts in April and March. So we do need to kind of look at that and also talk about creative, strategic ways that we could utilize that tool once all the customer service areas are on board, to utilize that tool to communicate messages like that across the valley.
Okay. Good. And then the last thing is, I don't know if you were listening in last night, but the bulletin received high praise from the board, and obviously Kathy Martin and her crew's involvement, but we also knew that you had a major hand in that. So we just want to say job well done on the bulletin. I think it was succinct, but loaded with good information. So well done.
Yeah, it was a fantastic collaboration effort, Director Ford. I did push for this and help write many components of it, but have to hand the communication team the ability to make this look informative without alarming people, I think is very important too. You know, so they did a very great job putting this together in a way that's easy to read and succinct. So I was a great collaborative effort amongst our groups.
Agreed. Matt, the board did really appreciate the effort, but it was brought forward by Director Horzikowski, and he really admired the work and just brought it to our attention. That was really grateful that he did that. Thank you.
Thank you.
You know, hey, Matt, Bill, I'm in the Valencia water service area, and the water bill that we get, you know, gives us the little chart and the bar graph that shows here's how much water you used, here's what you should have used, what your allocation was. I thought we had that everywhere now. I guess we don't. I think if conservation is going to be a way of life, I think that thing is really important. When I open the bill, the first thing I look at is the bar graph to see did I make it or not. And it goes back to when I was managing water treatment plants. If you gave people a target and you said, by the end of the month, I want these reservoirs at these levels around California. I want energy use at these levels, and you guys figure out how to do it. They did. We didn't have to tell them how to do it, is they did it. And so if you give up in those bills, if you can show, and maybe down the road, is not only what did you do this month and did you meet your allocation, but here's your allocation for next month.
Right, sure.
Now, is it a little higher? Is it a little lower? And I'll try to meet that goal. After the fact, it's, well, sorry, I didn't make it, and I'll try harder next month. If you give me one for the following month, I'll try to hit that. And I think people will do that. So, yeah. You know, just a thought for something to look at in the billing, because I really like Valencia's billing, or Santa Clarita's billing in the Valencia area.
Yeah, and see, Newhall had that. So, Jeff, you were Newhall, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So, but is it all of Santa Clarita water that didn't have that?
That's correct.
So, yeah. Isn't that the largest customer? Because you said about that.
It was about equal to Valencia.
It's about equal. San Francisco. Okay. So, yeah, but there's a good portion of people that don't get that information. And, yeah, how do you know? You're not going to, like, get last month's bill and go, oh, I'm a little less, or get out your calculator and calculate if it's not a pretty graph.
And you show me what next month is going to be, and I'll try to hit those targets. But
there's a fascinating history to those programs that dates back to the first water use efficiency strategic plan. I think that came out in 2008 or 2009, and it called for that system. And Valencia did that system by hand measuring all of its 26,000 residential customers. It should be noted that that GIS technician, once he hand measured 26,000 polygons, he split for Hawaii. Once he was
done. That's a true story.
And it's a true story. And then Newhall did theirs working with, I believe, GIS students from CSUN. And so that was very creative as well. We didn't have that same capability. That's a big lift. That's the biggest lift of getting a customer service area into a water efficiency target or allocation system. Fortunately, and this is just a benefit here, now that the customer information systems have migrated and we have one system, we also were given landscape area measurement data from the state as part of its AB 1668, SB 606, which means that we might have the capability to leverage that data at no cost and put that into the system by matching it to polygons and getting rid of that heavy lift. So there's some strategic timing to this, but we do need to sit down once customer care is confident that their system is working as they intended, that the integration is successful, then I think we're going to have a lot of opportunities moving forward to bring all the customer service areas into that system, into the water efficiency targets. And then I think we should probably connect back to the public and say, what should we be calling this? What makes sense to you? Should it be water efficiency targets, water smart allocation? To me, it's what makes most sense for our customers. But we do certainly have some great opportunities with that system in the not too distant future. Couple that with AMI meters in the next 5-10 years, you're going to get some really cool sophistication and technological capabilities to communicate with customers in real time or near real time with water efficiency targets and budgets. So a really exciting future on the horizon. We're just kind of currently in transition. So, you know, we're still building that capacity, but high hopes for the future.
I'm just getting an idea. The CIS system went live a week and a half ago.
The
customer information system. Okay. So it's the billing platform.
System. That for all.
Okay. Got it fully integrated. And so there's a whole process with that too, because Valencia and Newhall had the same platform and were essentially already in it. Santa Cruz customers are now they're going to have a different new billing number. There's a bunch of different things going on as they transition into the new system. So I'm sure all of you are familiar of, if you get that wrong, it can go really wrong. And so
ask DWP.
Exactly. And so there's been a lot of effort on the front end to get it right. But there will be bugs as you work through that over the next month, 2 months.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, to Matt's point, I think we are looking at ways that we can engage, you know, communications-wise on the bills again. It'll be very consistent throughout the whole valley at that point. So I think we're looking forward to getting to that point.
That was helpful, thank you, because I'm getting comments from constituents. Why do I have a new account number? What is going on? I had no way of knowing that until you just said what you said. So
yeah, I didn't realize they got new account numbers and that. And
it'll only be
a course they were going to shut off his water because. and people have told me that it's very hard. They have rental properties that it's very hard to pay your bill because it was in different places that you had to pay it. One was
it's correct.
Yeah, and hopefully it's all
different.
Yeah.
They're getting some bugs worked out.
This was a huge deal. It's a huge lift when you merge any kind of system like that, especially the billing component. It's a big deal. So this was a major accomplishment, and we'll kind of get our feet under ourselves here, and then we'll be able to really leverage, you know, the system going forward.
Looking forward to some real good stuff in the future, Matt. Thank you.
Next month.
I want to
close with thanking Matt and his staff. You can imagine the call volume. Maybe you can't.
No, I can. I call 32 people in queue.
Yeah. So their staff has been, you know, fielding a lot of calls, and they've been doing a tremendous job with that. So just wanted to make sure I took the time to do that.
Yeah. Very busy.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks, Matt.
Thank you, Ruby.
Thanks, Matt. So we'll go on to item number 6, Steve, your plan calendar.
Yeah, I don't have too much to share. I gave you kind of the quick, you know, rundown there earlier. So the planning calendar is there, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Right. Anybody in the public?
No.
Not even uni.
She doesn't know how it happened.
My 99% is correct.
Any questions for Steve on the calendar? Great. So with that, we are adjourned. Thank you, everyone who's been on the staff.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Hey.